From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Wednesday edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Chase Parham, Neil McCready with you from the Clark Ford Studio this morning. David Brandt of the Associated Press will join us shortly. About a half hour of mostly college football with Dave. We run through Ole Miss, run through Mississippi State as well. We talk a little St. Louis Cardinals and more with the Mississippi writer for the Associated Press, one of your favorites. Hadn't had him on in a while, I guess since he got back from covering the Olympics, and we talked about that, I think, is the last time we had David on the program. So we remedied that today, and the program is brought to you every single day by the Oxford Exxon, Highway 6 West in Oxford. Daiquiris, as little as $3.99, as big as 44 ounces if you so desire. Get the Speed Pass Plus. Don't have to go inside. Don't have to talk to clerks. You pay right there at your mobile device. Don't have to worry about credit card fraud. And you make or save money in the process. I guess you're technically making money if you're saving money with the Speed Pass Plus. So download it. Use it at all Blue Sky locations inside the state of Mississippi. Go next door to the Oxford Crystal. But you have to wait a day. You guys have sold out the Minna Cheese Bites at the Oxford Crystal. So we appreciate all the support. I told you, they're pretty good. So get them. But it'll be later in the day or tomorrow before you're able
to. Way to go, people.
Yeah, screwed it up for everybody by ordering too many. But, again, they are sold out. They will be back. So when you go to the drive-thru.
Got to go kill some pimentos.
Kill some pimentos.
I mean, you know, I mean, it just – stuff doesn't grow on trees, man.
Or does a pimento? Was a chili, so.
Technically, kind of does grow on a plant.
Yeah. You want to rethink that a little bit for a second?
No, it was a joke.
Okay.
When you go over when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor? Come on, really?
Let's tell them about Clark Ford.
Clark Ford's in Amory, Mississippi. 662-257-1900. Call that number. Ask for Corey Clark. Tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for. Maybe it's a previously owned Ford that you're looking for. You want a quote. You want a couple of quotes. He'll do it. You get your quotes. You're going to get them within 15 minutes in business hours. It's going to be right to the bottom line. You're not going to have to do the whole brokering thing that you do a lot of times with car dealers. You get your quote, and then it's up to you. Shop it around if you'd like, compare, whatever. You'll end up coming back to Corey because Corey is going to do for you what he does for me and so many others, and that's take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience. You get a great Ford vehicle, tremendous service after the sale, delivery options, all of those things. It's a different car buying experience. It's a different car relationship, if you will. And at the end of your deal, tell Corey that you heard about Clark Ford on the podcast. Mention any of our family of podcasts. It's $500 off the bottom line from Clark Ford and Amory, 662-257-1900.
I posted this on the message board yesterday, and again, it's not really not at all a bragging thing. People gave me crap about it, but that wasn't really my point. But it was sort of an observation a couple days ago of how parenting has probably changed me.
Yes.
Things that I probably don't notice as intently. I was going for a run the other day, and I passed this little girl that had a lemonade stand up in the neighborhood, and came around, and she like came out and held up the sign that clearly her mother helped her made, where the sign was shaped like a lemon. She kind of held it up, and I was running, and I was like, okay, if I stop, I'm never going to get going again, so I'm just going to keep going. So, and the way the route goes, I run through my neighborhood where it's pretty much a mile, and if I'm going not crazy distances, I'll run the same little thing several times. So I pass her the second time and the third time, and I kind of started feeling like an idiot, or kind of an ass, if you will, as I kept going by, because every time I'd go by, she'd hold up the sign. So when I got done, my conscience was weighing on me to the point of, I went inside, got some cash, walked back over. It was for a fundraiser for something, and bought a cup. But I thought, you know, it's amazing how you notice things where several years ago, I probably notice it, but I don't think it impacts me enough to actually stop and do anything about it. There's no way.
You don't think you would have gone and got you some lemonade?
No, I really don't. I mean, not in a rude way. I just don't think you're observant as much. I just think there's certain things when you have children that maybe you pick out as bigger deals to the other side. than you would without that experience.
There's no question.
Yeah.
I know you make you see the world.
I kind of had one of those Freudian internal moments while I was running, and I went, you know, this is different than maybe it would have been some other time. So
parenting does change.
Also, the neighborhood's not very busy. I doubt she sold a whole lot. Like, it wasn't a high traffic area for lemonade sales.
How much was the lemonade?
It's only 50 cents. I didn't know how much it was before I walked over because I didn't notice the price when I was running. So I took $1.50 and gave her the $1.50. So
oh boy,
it's a large tip.
Did she try to give you three cups?
No, but as I was leaving, she yelled again, "Would you like another cup already?" And her mother goes, "Well, he hasn't finished that one yet. Let's wait a minute." But yeah,
keep selling.
Yeah,
always be closing.
Yeah, the mother was a little worried about my health because it was really hot outside. She told me I was being an idiot for running at that time, which was observant and true.
Wasn't as bad yesterday.
No, this was not yesterday. This was a couple days ago when it was brutal. Scorching.
Yeah,
it was bad.
I ran at like 6 o'clock the other day when it was super hot. I don't know if you know this, but our neighborhood has dragons.
Dragons.
I think I hallucinated the dragons. It was so hot.
Goblins.
Goblins and dragons. It was not as bad yesterday.
Well, the dragons could be fire breathing, which would...
Yeah, it would explain the heat.
It would.
Yeah. Well, that was nice of you.
Yeah, just a thought, something that stuck with me a little bit. And I said, you know, that's... Lemonade stands are kind of that quaint Rockwellian thing. You know what I mean? That's mostly bygone. I've seen the OPD tweet out a couple in town, but... Not something you really see a whole lot anymore for the most part. Lemonade was pretty good.
And part of the problem is that most of the lemonade stands don't take PayPal or credit cards. You know, it's just
that would be a really clutch move to have Venmo as an option for the for the lemonade stand. I would actually kind of appreciate that. Like, just put the Venmo username on the sign next to it.
Do you carry cash much?
No, and I get made fun of by buddies all the time because I carry no cash. I mean, I might have a dollar or some change in my console, but no, as far as like needing a 5, a 10, or a 20 for exchange with someone.
Oh, hardly ever.
No, nothing.
I mean, my wallet right now has like $22 in it, which is a record. It's the most my wallet has had in it in, I'd venture to guess, 2 years.
There is no cash, and there is a key in the compartment where the cash goes in my wallet that I'm holding at the moment. So, yeah, no, nothing.
So your friends carry a lot of cash?
They carry a decent amount of cash, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Well, it's a point of contention on the golf course if we're betting a little bit, nothing life-changing at all. But, you know, you owe somebody $6 at the end of a round for some reason, and I'm going to need to Venmo you or PayPal you or do something digital from a currency standpoint. And, yeah, the ones that don't do the digital currency or that carry, you know, the fives and the ones and a 10 in their golf bag give me crap about it pretty often.
Yeah, but I guess I could see that. My experience,
it plays the same. Well, see, to me, it's your fault if you don't have some semblance of digital currency option at this point.
Yeah.
That's not my problem.
Even I have Venmo.
Yeah. I mean, because see, it's huge for me because that's how I pay babysitters. That's pretty much the only way that I pay babysitters now is through Venmo. Like when they walk in the door, if it's not one that I'm used to, which we have pretty much the same rotation, the same ones every time, but I'll go, "Do you have Venmo?" When they don't, I'm like, "God, now I've got to go to the ATM." Like, they have less chance of getting called back because of the difficulty they're putting me in to pay them. I mean, I guess I could write them a check.
I was going to say, you just write a check.
But then I run out of checks because I write a lot of checks.
Order more checks.
Because, like, you and I are kind of dumb. We write checks back and forth to each other constantly instead of probably just figuring out what the total amount would be at the end of a week for 2 week period.
Yeah, but I need to do that for my tax purposes.
But you really don't. You could itemize it differently through just how it works.
I could. My accountant would prefer that things are itemized.
Okay.
That's the truth.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'm not doubting that, but I'm just saying.
As I try to recover.
Did you get hit? I'm messing with you. I know the answer.
My tax hit?
I'm not. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was a brutal tax beating. It wasn't a hit.
You got bludgeoned.
I got filleted.
Yeah. Clubbed ahead.
The stitching that was needed to put me back together after the tax hit that I took.
Oh. I was told that by a couple different people that the I don't think the shark is getting announced this week. I think it's in a couple weeks when they're giving the mascot out.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I was told.
That's too bad.
I still don't know what it looks like. I haven't been told that, but
I hope it's. I've heard a rumor that it was not going to be an actual shark. That it was going to be an ode to Tony Fine. I don't know. I don't care. I'm not asking. I will not make a phone call on this. Period. No matter what.
You won't?
No.
Not worth a bullet?
No. Not even worth, like, the effort that it would take to load the bullet. I hope for their sake it's a shark. It's an actual shark and not a... I do. But whatever.
Okay.
I mean, I have Cub fan friends who still get pissy about Clark the Cub.
What's Clark the Cub?
He's their mascot. They unveiled him a few years ago.
He's a bear?
Yeah.
He's a cub?
He's a bear. He's a happy.
He's not the typical baseball mascot, which is some alien-looking figure that's actually nothing?
No, he's a bear.
Everybody tried to, like, copy, I guess, the Philly Fanatic. Stop copy. Just whatever your mascot is, do that. And I get that the Braves with the Indians have a little more difficult situation because they had, what, Chief Nakahoma?
Yeah.
Back in the day.
Did you see the...
Used to be like the real guy that used to bang on the drum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He can't do that anymore.
Why? That was good.
It's so politically incorrect. And these days, you can't do anything that is politically incorrect. Nothing. Do you see where the Yankees once were on the verge of having a mascot? They actually had the plans in place to have a mascot.
Like an Uncle Sam looking dude?
No, his name was Dandy. And he was kind of like... a goofy baseball-looking-y mascot-y person.
I mean, on the level of if you are offended by these type of things, the different levels of Braves mascots of Chief Nakahoma throughout the... I mean, let me give you a couple here as I'm doing this. This was the guy I'm talking about with literally a teepee standing up on his, like, perch or whatever.
I remember that at Atlanta Fulton County Stadium.
Yeah. I mean, dressed in full ceremonial Indian garb or whatever it was. And then this thing that we all remember when they had the big-headed Indian-looking dude.
Oh, I've forgotten about him. Yeah.
Had the mohawk down the middle and just had a big Indian-looking head.
Oh, for sure. This was Dandy.
I've seen that. Yeah.
And the Yankees went on a losing streak, and Lou Piniella was the Yankee outfielder at the time who got upset at the San Diego Chicken at a road game and made a comment about baseball's mascots don't belong in baseball, and George Steinbrenner killed it literally days before his debut was scheduled.
It's interesting.
It is.
Late in Nakahoma's duration, Hopewell, Virginia native Kimberly Ann Kalos was introduced as Princess Winalotta.
That's a great name.
Winalotta.
Winalotta.
Well, as we said a minute ago, I mean, I get that certain things have to be avoided. I mean, I'm not 100 on the scale from 0 to 100, but completely gone are the days to where you don't agree with something or don't like something and you just ignore it. You move on with your day to whatever it is you actually do enjoy watching or consuming or listening to and go, you know, that's probably for somebody else. Not really my cup of tea. I'm going to move on with my day. Now we have to be concerned about everything and everybody and every show. And if you don't appeal to our ideals, we not only have a problem with you, we try to get you shut down. It is amazing to me where this thing has got to reverse back a little bit. I'm a really big proponent, and I do believe that everything has balance and moves in separate directions for a cost, kind of a cost-benefit analysis thing. This is getting to the point where it's got to tip scales back in the other direction. It has to, right?
I mean, look, I think so. I'm the guy, you know this. My answer.
You're about as live and let live as humanly possible.
My answer to so many things is I don't care. And people get mad, and it's my true feeling. I've tried to think what offends me. What happens that offends me? And if it's not abuse of children,
No, if they say some type of physical harm to certain entities is probably what gets you going more than anything else.
I saw a story yesterday, not to take the buzzkill off of our show, about a woman that was arrested on multiple counts of child abuse because she allowed men to have intercourse with her 2-year-old daughter. I don't think offended's the right word. I wanted to go through the screen and kill her. I wanted to wrap my arm, my hands around her neck and squeeze the life out of her. I was so upset. But like stuff like mascots and
TV shows.
Yeah, I'm just that guy. And I know this is a novel concept in today's America, but if I don't want to watch, I just don't. If I don't want to watch a movie, I just don't. If I don't want to read a book, I just don't. But if you do, that's cool. I'm not that guy. I don't. If you want to have a parade, have a parade. If I want to attend, I'll attend. If I don't, I won't. I'm cool with it. I'm totally serious here. If you want to wear an Cleveland Indians cap with the Chief Wahoo, okay. If you don't, okay.
It's a great logo.
It's a great logo.
And it's being phased out, but it's a great logo. Well,
they baseball made a deal. Get rid of it, and we'll give you the next All-Star game. When the All-Star game brings hundreds of millions of dollars to your town, how do you say no? And now people are upset that they lost their mascot. To me, that was kind of blackmail on the part of Major League Baseball, but I sort of get it. They're trying to eliminate a negative. I'm shocked that the Washington Redskins still exist, yet I'm not the guy that's offended by the Redskins. The Redskins have been around for a long time. I find it difficult to believe that someone is truly offended by that. Honestly, I do. I'm sorry, I do. I don't see how that's truly offensive. The Braves have been around for a long time. If you're really offended by the Atlanta Braves, if that's the worst thing going in your life,
you have to be a little shocked that the mascot and thing hadn't become like a soldier or something.
Yes.
Keep the Braves and become some other thing.
Become something else. It's like I said about the shark at Ole Miss. I mean, it is going to be – that's why I do it right. If you're Michael Thompson and those people, in the event that you're listening still after this this conversation, if you're still engaged, you need to do it right. Do it right, because it is – I know people push back on this. It's probably an insurance policy. And we all take out insurance policies hoping we don't use them, right?
Of course.
I mean, you get life insurance. You're how old?
34.
You have life insurance.
I do.
You're hoping it's wasted money.
Yeah.
Most of the people in your life are probably hoping it's wasted money.
But it's there if you need it.
But it's there if you have to use it, so – I'd do this right. I would take out the right insurance policy in the shark. I would make sure I make my payments every month, just in case I ever have to use it. It's ready made. If Montreal gets a baseball team, and the commissioner, I'm not completely making this up. Rob Manfred, the commissioner of Major League Baseball, said the other day that there were multiple markets they're considering. They'd like to expand by two. He said Montreal was one of those. I think most people believe Montreal will get a team. Don't you think UP has to come back? UP was great.
He was, yes. Well, you have to just be the Expos again.
Yes, don't you?
Those uniforms are so good.
Bring the uniform back.
Yeah.
I mean, it's ready-made. Here's what's interesting. You tell me, and he hinted that, hey, Tampa, Miami, if this thing doesn't work, we have markets that are ready-made. How do you think Major League Baseball would do in Nashville? Because I think it would do really well. Better than Tampa.
Well, yeah, duh.
Better than Miami.
Yes.
Vegas? If you build an indoor facility that has a retractable roof, I think it does better than Miami. Portland, better than Miami.
Vegas is kind of a baseball town when you consider Henderson. I'm talking about the strip. Like when you say Vegas, everybody goes, oh, it's all tourists. Well, no, Henderson's pretty big. I mean, there's area around Vegas. It's a lot of games. I think it's okay, but that would scare me a little. Nashville's kind of in that, and let me see what the population is real quick. Population.
booming.
684,016.
But what about Metropolitan Davidson County and all that? Williamson County, whatever it's called.
Well, because I want to make a point, but I want to see the two populations before I do that. 1.9 million.
Okay.
Is Nashville. What I've wondered about a little bit, and I can't find a population for this, and I know Nashville's bigger, probably by a decent amount. Actually, it is. It's about 400,000 bigger. You know, the city that I always thought, and one time it was the city that had the most population without having one of the four major sports teams, is I kind of put Nashville in that category with Louisville, where I go, maybe, yeah, sort of. Kind of. Now, where Nashville has an advantage is there's nothing just unbelievably close to it, whereas Cincinnati's so close to Louisville.
Right.
And you have these other areas where, I mean, the AAA team's in Louisville right now. The Bats are the Reds team. So it probably doesn't work as well just in theory, but I always thought Nashville and Louisville were very similar as far as areas that potentially could be of benefit to Major League Baseball.
Yeah. I agree with you completely. Louisville has, with Louisville Slugger and all that stuff, it makes, I mean, they have a ready-made name, the Sluggers.
Yeah.
I think Nashville's going to get a team. I do. Nashville's going to get, I think there's going to be four new teams. There's going to be two expansion teams, and I think the two teams out of Florida are going to move. I don't think they're going to make it.
Both of them.
I don't know how long that takes, but the Marlins.
There won't be a major league team in Florida.
The Marlins are averaging about 8,000 fans a game.
It's that bad.
It's awful. 8,000.
Don't hit me with the yeah buts, but yeah, Miami is averaging fewer fans than an SEC baseball weekend at multiple places.
Yeah.
Miami.
Yeah.
Now, they're not even trying to win.
They're not trying to win, but when they did try to win, they didn't draw great.
No.
And they've built that stadium in downtown, and people don't want to fight the traffic. That's not what people want to do in Miami on a Thursday night. If you're visiting Miami, are you really wanting to go to a Marlins game?
You have zero interest.
You want to go to out. You want to be
And that's
out.
The reason, though, at Vegas, you've got to hit it with – got to really get buy-in from that area around it.
But what you do get in Vegas, it's why the hockey's worked. They had the buy-in from the area, and you also get people that are like, hey, you know what? Yeah, we're going to go out in Vegas tonight, but I'm not a gambler.
So what can we do?
What can we do? Or, yeah, we're going out in Vegas tonight, but the party doesn't get started till 10:30 or 11. Let's go to the ball game. We'll have a couple of beers, then we'll go hit the casinos till 3 in the morning. And in Nashville, what you have is Nashville's fast becoming a major convention hub. People come in for conventions. What do you do at night? Oh, the Sounds or whatever are in town.
Sure, why not?
Why not? Especially if you build a downtown ballpark. Downtown Nashville's thriving. So I don't know. Interesting. I don't have no idea how we got there.
No, it's all good. Anyway, we're going to go to David Brandt in 1 second. For the day, I'll tell you, the podcast is brought to you in part by MasterCuts Lawn and Landscape, 662-607-7773, mastercutslawn.com. Weed eating, edging, yard mowing, yard aeration, outdoor living areas, outdoor kitchens, and much more with MasterCuts. Again, 662-607-7773.
The podcast is also brought to you by Grenada Nissan. If you're in the market for a Nissan vehicle, look no further than Grenada Nissan. They have a complete selection of new and previously owned Nissan vehicles. They have a great lease deals as well. You can drive get a 2017, 2018 vehicle at 1990s prices there at Grenada Nissan. It's GrenadaNissanUSA.com. The football season approaching. Sharks, Rebels, Bears, all of those things. At Vaught Hemingway Stadium, there will be lots of tailgating in the Grove, as there always is. It starts September 8th. It's the first of 7 home dates. 7 South Tailgating is celebrating 10 years of business this season. If you haven't tried 7 South, you should. And once you try them once, you'll never tailgate without them again. They'll set up your own personal gear, or you can rent everything from them. No one matches their customer service, their attention to detail. They've got a package for you no matter how often you're coming, how intricate or not your tailgate is. It's 7southtailgating.com. Podcast also brought to you by Oxford University Bank. OUB, locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. OUB gives you the comfort of home, all the benefits the big mega banks provide, all the technology and products you want, all with the personal touch. When you call OUB, you speak directly with the live person, all without having to press 10 buttons and without a 5-minute wait. OUB offers its customers the absolute best cash checking account. It is called Kasasa, and with Kasasa, OUB will pay customers 2.5% interest on their balances up to $50,000. To learn more about OUB, check out liveoxfordbankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured. And Rebel Nation, 2018 is the year of the fan. Ole Miss Athletics wants to showcase your stories and recognize you, the Ole Miss fan base. Exciting prizes and experiences throughout the year will be featured on omyearofthefan.com, an updated often. So be sure to visit omyearofthefan.com.
Now, David Brandt on the Billy's Pecans hotline. David, good morning. We've had a little pre-conversation. It sounds like you had to ward off a little YouTube kids in your house this morning.
I have to do it just about every morning.
Yeah.
Yes, it was right in my office this morning. Like we were talking about YouTube kids, man. Yeah, you have to watch them, or they can watch it for about 10 hours straight if you don't police it a little bit.
What was the one show when they were a little younger that just drove you nuts?
Oh, that one's easy. Caillou.
Yeah.
Like, on TV. I mean, Caillou was by far the most annoying one. Like, most of them that they watched were not too bad. I mean, they weren't my favorites or anything like that. Luckily, they didn't stick very long on Caillou, but that was the one, just the songs, just those jingles in your head made you want to, run out your front door screaming.
I think I avoided that. Everybody says that. That's pretty much the most popular answer, and I don't think I'm going to have to deal with that. We've bypassed it. So props there. You also mentioned SEC Media Days a second ago. You probably are pretty grateful every July that you're not spending a week in Birmingham or Atlanta anymore.
Well, actually, this was the first time I haven't gone
was
in
really?
Like 11 or 12 years. Yeah,
okay.
I usually, when it's in Birmingham, that's close enough that I go over and help our Alabama writer, John Diener.
Gotcha.
But when it's in Atlanta, obviously it's a longer trip. It was more expensive because it was in downtown Atlanta, and we have AP writers in Atlanta, so it didn't make a lot of sense to send me. I understood that. So, I miss, seeing my friends and kind of being in the fold of what's happening at the SEC a little bit. But yeah, I mean, watching 14 coaches at a podium for an hour, that part I did not miss very much.
We asked this as we were talking. We sort of did a Hugh Freeze remembrance show on Monday, as it was a year after his demise as Ole Miss head coach. Kind of curious, what do you think? In a few years, 10 years past since he's done, what do you think his overall legacy is going to be?
That's a great question. I did this on Twitter maybe, I don't know if it was last summer, but several months ago I did a Twitter poll question of, in 2025, they have a Sugar Bowl, celebration, the 10 year of the team or something like that. Is Hugh Freeze even invited back at that point? And do you think he will be? I think a lot of it still depends on what happens here in the next 3 or 4 years. If Ole Miss gets, kind of gets through these sanctions and everything without too much damage, if they have a couple kind of 6-6 years and then kind of go back to being a contender in the West, winning 8 or 9 games, I think that there will be a lot of people who appreciate Hugh Freeze for what he did with the Sugar Bowls and winning all those games and bringing high-level recruits. I think there will always obviously be a stain on his legacy because of the NCAA sanctions, but I think that if the team – say they tank this year for some reason and then go 4-8 for the next decade, I think there's going to be a lot of animosity that, Hugh Freeze's tenure truly kind of brought Ole Miss to its knees a little bit. And I think the jury's still kind of out on that. It just depends on what happens the next few years.
Oh, I think it is in his best interest, if it matters to him, to one day be appreciated by Ole Miss people. And it might not. I have no idea. But if it does, it's in his best interest that Matt Luke steady the ship.
Oh, absolutely. I think there's no question about that. That's what I mean. I mean, I think you know, Hugh Freeze's legacy is contingent a lot on what happens the next 3 or 4 years. I mean, I think otherwise, because if there's really, you know, last year they won the Egg Bowl, you know, it wasn't a great year, but it wasn't a disaster. If this year is okay, if somehow Matt Luke can recruit well enough to keep it going 6-7 wins, and whether it's Matt Luke or somebody else, then take them down the line. I think a lot of people will appreciate Hugh Freeze for bringing them, you know, the elite players for the Sugar Bowl. It'll kind of be that wild and crazy time in Ole Miss football history, and everybody will kind of laugh about it, you know, and everything. But if again, like you said, if there's a bunch of 4-8 seasons, if there's, you know, nobody in the stands, if it really brings kind of a malaise over Ole Miss football, I think that really hurts Hugh Freeze historically and you know, in the next 10 years. So we'll see. Like you said, I think it is definitely at Hugh Freeze's best interest for Matt Luke to do well. And I don't know if overachieve is the right word, but certainly win some football games.
You know, as someone who writes columns each week, Chase and I were talking the other day about thank God for the AP, and I you guys have even changed the way that you do, quote, game stories. We don't ever write a game story anymore. You guys don't really truly write game stories anymore. You have changed the way that you do them. Regardless, I start kind of thinking ahead about what would I write if, and if this season goes badly, and I don't know that it will, I don't know that it won't, I think it's going to be somewhere in the middle, but if it were to go badly, I'm probably going to frustrate people because they're going to want criticism of Matt Luke. And while Matt Luke might get some of that criticism, I've thought to myself, there's no way around the fact that this is a mess that was created by Hugh Freeze.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, and Matt Luke obviously was an assistant coach on the staff, so obviously he knew, you know, he's had a hand in, you know, what's gone on as far as creating this roster. But yeah, I mean, any coach, especially their first couple years, is sort of beholden to what the previous coach did as far as talent and recruiting. I mean, and just because, you know, Matt Luke's situation is a little different than some other coaches, the rule still applies. And I mean, I think the current coach can make a situation better. They can make it worse. We've seen that happen, you know, many times. And sometimes a coach, like, say, in 2007 with Ed Orgeron, kind of he had, you know, at least from what the players had said, kind of mentally beaten them down so much that just a change of direction, a breath of fresh air, you bring a different coach in. And I think Houston Nutt is regarded as a solid coach, but I don't know if anybody's going to confuse him for Nick Saban or anything like that. You bring in Houston Nutt, and suddenly that's one of the top 15 teams in the country. You know, so I think a different, you know, approach to things, a different scheme, a different just attitude can mean a lot. And so I think that always part of the blame would be, like you said, if the season goes poorly or if it goes really well, Matt Luke gets some of the credit, he gets some of the blame. But part of that is also on the recruiting and just program building that Hugh Freeze did for the past several years.
You think Freeze is going to get blackballed in the league for a few more years, or does he latch on somewhere as an assistant inside the SEC?
I think he latches on somewhere next year if that's what he wants to do. I think that he was too successful on offense. I think that there are teams that will be desperate enough. I don't know about a head coach quite yet, but I kind of think, and I think it may not even be inside the SEC, but I think that, yes, I believe if Hugh Freeze wants to do it, he will have a job next year.
Could be quite the soap opera, Hugh Freeze recruiting Mississippi as an assistant coach at another school.
Yes, it would. That will be the gift that keeps on giving as far as, you know, storylines and different things like that. And like you say, it might be in his best interest to go somewhere like in the ACC or something like that where he's not around Mississippi and not around the SEC. You know what I mean? Because if I'm just throwing schools out here, but say he goes and is the offensive coordinator at Virginia. That's a story for a few weeks. I mean, certainly that story gets written and it's really interesting. But then by and large, unless Virginia starts playing well, which I'm sure they would want to do, you know, Hugh Freeze largely disappears, you know, because he's not in the SEC fold on a day-to-day basis. He's not necessarily recruiting Mississippi or anywhere in this area very often. That might, if he's got the connections to do something like that, I think that might be the easiest way to get back into football and to truly concentrate on football without necessarily all of the circus.
If he wants to be, do you think he's a Power 5 head coach within 5 years?
If the scenario plays out that he got an offensive coordinator job, you know, in the next, say, year or two, and that offense did well and they won games, I mean, there's just too many teams out there. It's interesting because I think we've talked before on this show, there's a lot of coaches that have had, like, NCAA issues. There's a lot of coaches who have had personal issues. There's very few that have had both in this at the same time. And so I do think Freeze's bio is different in that way. But he also won a lot of games. There's no doubt that he can coach offensive, exciting football that people enjoy. And I think there's a lot of people that need to put rear ends in the seats and make money. And so I do think somebody's going to give him a chance to run an offense. And if that goes well, I think you're going to see a lot of teams in the next five or so years look really hard at that. What do you guys think?
He's got to get off Twitter or change his Twitter. If I'm a program, I can't roll down and I can't go down that road unless it's like I know Oral Roberts doesn't play football, but unless it's like one of those super religious based schools,
like Liberty or something,
yeah,
like that.
Like something like that. But I mean, not a Power 5 job. I think he's got to completely change his Twitter persona.
That's a good point. You wonder what kind of concessions people are going to say that. I mean, because I follow Hugh Freeze still on Twitter too, just like you guys do. And you know, it's not necessarily. I mean, he's not the first coach that invented tweeting Bible verses or, you know, inspirational quotes or anything like that. It's just obviously with Freeze's history now and everything, it comes across, whether rightly or wrongly, and maybe we don't, you know, this maybe it's our problem, but it comes across as disingenuous sometimes. And I do think that would be something that other schools, you know, whenever he gets an offensive coordinator, if he gets an offensive coordinator job, that's all going to be dissected, and it'll be interesting to see if he's willing to change. Maybe he's not, and maybe he shouldn't. I don't know. But I do think that it's amazing how much, you know, in the age of this presidency and everything too, you know, just how powerful Twitter can be somewhere for good, for bad, for, you know, for better or for worse. But I think that's part of the Hugh Freeze package right now.
You know, Neil and I talked about it yesterday, and we're kind of both sides of it here because, yeah, Twitter can be very, very powerful. It shapes a certain segment of the internet, but it's still such a small sample size of entire fan bases, entire perspectives of anything, until I almost think there's certain instances where we take Twitter too seriously as far as actually shaping opinion. It's such an isolated thing when it comes to overall basis for whatever we're talking about.
Oh, I 7,000,000% agree with you on that one. I don't know. If we had a like button on this phone, I would just be punching it over and over. Twitter is such an echo chamber. You know what I mean? It's a lot of, you know, obviously there's a lot of people on it. There's a lot of young people on it. So it can give you a feel for what's going on there a little bit, but Twitter is not real life, and it's not even close to real life as far as, you know, like sort of getting a temperature of, you know, the overall fan base at a place or different things like that. You know, the people who are the loudest on Twitter, the people who have the most biting comment, sometimes, you know, get the most pub when that's not really, you know, the pulse of a fan base or the pulse of anything like that. But still, I was just talking about from a journalistic standpoint, Twitter's easy. You know what I mean? I think reporters latch on to Twitter. And again, this could be right or wrong, or we could go down a 2-hour rabbit hole about this, but you know, Twitter as a journalist comes to you. And so when you make, you know, when anybody from a Hugh Freeze to a Donald Trump to anybody tweets out things, it's an easy thing to report about. It's very public and it's there pretty much forever. Just ask Josh Hader. And so, you know, it doesn't represent reality, but at the same time, it's also it's such a powerful force, even if it's not always representative of what's actually going on.
Well, yeah, and the people are saying it. I mean, you know, it's direct quotes, like you said, so it's right there in front of you and easy to grab. So take a break in our talk with David to tell you that Locker Stockers can help you out this football season stocking your locker or your suite. The customer places the order. They handle purchase and delivery to the locker suite before game day. Also, they're offering early sign-up bonuses of 10% off for a season package if you sign up before August 1st. So give them a call at 662-586-1487 or info@lockerstockers.com to make that hassle much easier for you.
David Brandt and all other guests join us on the Billy's Pecans Hotline. Let Billy's Pecans add a few goodies to your tailgate as you get ready for the 2018 football season. They've got the cinnamon spice pecans, the toasted pecans, all sorts of chocolate pecans, milk chocolate, dark chocolate, white chocolate, chocolate amaretto, chocolate Grand Marnier, sugar-free chocolate, and more. All of those at Billy's Pecans. They've got other things as well, such as the Southern Pecan Toffee, the Cheese Krispies, the Pecan Brittle, coffee cakes, sauces, jellies, and more. It's all at Billy's Pecans, billyspecans.com. It's B-I-L-L-I-E-S, pecans.com, 1-800-624-7404. Now back to David Brandt on the Billy's Pecans Hotline.
Shifting gears a little bit, if you had to predict Ole Miss and State season within one game, what record would you put on both of them?
Oh, I think State is – I kind of – depending on, like, how the day is going and how I feel that day, 8-4 or 9-3, you know, kind of in that area, I do think State has the talent to be very good this year. There's a couple things that worry about that – that worry me about them. I think that Nick Fitzgerald is healthy, and I think he's a good quarterback. But I think in order for that State offense to be as good as they want it to be, he can't just be healthy. He has to be like one of the best runners in the entire SEC. You know what I mean? They're not expecting him to just move a little bit and then throw the ball. They need him to run for like 1,200 yards. And he's coming off, you know, a pretty obviously a substantial broken ankle leg injury that you just wonder how he's going to respond if he still is that truly elite runner. And if he's not, then he has to compensate with his passing. Has his passing progressed? And so I'm watching that. And then also I'm just watching the fact I think Joe Moorhead has all the makings of being a really good coach. He was good at Fordham when he was a head coach. He was obviously good at Penn State. But I think anywhere you go in any situation, there's always – kind of a transition to your new place, what you're doing, implementing your offense, your defense. Bob Shoup on that defense, you know, we forget 2 years ago, Peter Sermon led that defense and it was a disaster. And then Todd Granham comes in and did a wonderful job. And there's obviously NFL talent on that defense, but I'd say talent matters, but scheme matters also. So does Bob Shoup's plan, you know, do they take to it quite as well as Todd Grant got to take to it? So I'm looking at the defense. I'm looking at Nick Fitzgerald, you know, just the transition. I think this team is talented enough, but I'd say, you know, if I'll go 9-3, but I can see 8-4 too. And then as far as Ole Miss, I just think this looks like a 6-6 season. I think the offense is really good. The defense is not. I mean, I'm not saying anything you don't know right now. It's just when you're that unbalanced, I think you're a dangerous team. I think they're a team that's capable of throwing 58 points on somebody and winning a shootout, but I think it keeps you from being a consistent winner and knocking off some of the really good teams in the SEC. So, you know, but saying they stay healthy, I think 6-6 is reasonable.
We call Texas Tech kind of the Daytona of Ole Miss's season because it seems like the ultimate swing game. What's maybe the second one you put on that list for Ole Miss that dictates whether it's 5-7, 6-6, or maybe 7-5?
Oh, that's a good question. I haven't looked at the schedule in a little bit. You know, I really – Texas Tech is a big one to me, too, just because I think, you know, all teams, that opener is important because it's the opener. But, it, you know, it's against another Power 5 team. It's against another, you know, team that's kind of in Ole Miss's position where it's trying to – prove itself in a Power 5 league. You know, a big swing game that I'm thinking of right now, and I know State is good, but the 8-ball, they get it at home. You know, they've got to get to 6-6. You've got to find a game to win that you're really not favored to win. You know what I mean? If you're Ole Miss, unless, you know, by November, all kinds of things could happen. We'll see. But at least right now, on July 25th, we are, you know, Ole Miss will not be favored in most of its SEC games. I think, you know, State is a big one. I think Arkansas is a big one just because Arkansas doesn't look like they're going to be that great this year. So Arkansas and Mississippi State are kind of two conference games that I think they could possibly win, that they need to steal one somewhere.
Do you buy the narrative at all that this is a season where Matt Luke has to win games and all that stuff to be able to recruit? Or do you think recruiting is more nuanced than that?
Yes. I believe that recruiting is nuanced. You know, like when people are like, oh, you won the Egg Bowl, that means you can recruit really well. It's like, slow down. One game doesn't mean everything. But I do think that there is a general feeling out there. I think recruits, I mean, you've talked to Matt Luke. I've talked to Matt Luke. He's a likable guy. I can understand why he could go into a home and recruit really well. You understand what I'm saying? But I think there is reservations, just human reservations, about, is Matt Luke really an SEC coach? You know, is this really, you know, was this a stopgap for Ole Miss? Or is this, you know, something that's going to, is Matt Luke going to be the coach for the next 10 years? And I think recruits are going to look at that. So it doesn't, you know, I don't think Matt Luke has to go 9-3 or anything like that. And the difference between, but if this season is like a 4-8 or a 3-9 and he loses that momentum, yeah, I think it hurts overall his ability to persuade a 3- or 4-star, you know, a really solid recruit who has options. I think it hurts his ability to steer them in the correct direction. I'm not saying it's a total program killer, but I think with Matt Luke, there's a question out there still if he can be a CEO of a program. And so I think relationships matter. I think all of that matters. But also, I think you've got to have confidence in the direction the program's going.
Matt Luke, obviously very passionate about the rivalry with Mississippi State, although it's not going to be antagonistic, I don't believe. What have you kind of sensed on Joe Moorhead's taste for this rivalry?
I sensed kind of the same thing. I think it really is going to be taken down a notch or two, which I don't think is a bad thing at all about the rivalry. Rivalries are fun, but the Egg Bowl had gotten a little, I mean, guys know probably better than most, but it had gotten a little weird and a little, you know, just bitter and all kinds of things. Like, I think Matt Luke and Joe Moorhead understand about rivalry and where to put it in its proper place. I mean, the week of the Egg Bowl, it's going to be a big deal. It is really going to be a big deal. But I think they've, you know, I think that they're not going to do that kind of sniping throughout the year. I mean, you know, that program, you know, they do what they do until the week of the year that it really matters. And then it's going to matter a lot. I mean, I think those guys are both going to be very passionate about winning that game. And I think they both know how important it is to the fan base and how, you know, when you talk about the, you know, if you could only win one game of the year, I think that's sort of a silly argument. But I think there's no doubt it's, if not the most important game, it's one of what your season is judged by. And so I just, Joe Moorhead kind of, I think, aligns very much with Matt Luke on that, you know, the rivalry really matters when it's time for that rivalry. But outside of that, we're not going to spend a lot of energy worrying about what the other school in the state is doing.
Did you like the white helmets?
I do.
Yeah.
Actually, I thought they looked sharp. I'm not, you know, I've kind of been ambivalent. I like, you know, in this era of, you know, changing your uniforms every week and stuff like that, I'm all for that as long as it looks good. And, you know, luckily for Ole Miss, it is really hard to screw up their colors. You know what I mean? Like, just about anything they do looks pretty darn good because their colors are so awesome. You know what I mean? Like, blue, red, white. You could do a lot of cool things with that. And so, you know, I think that, you know, for a one game thing, I mean, again, I didn't have like hugely strong feelings about it, but I think just about any uniform Ole Miss trots out looks pretty good.
Are you still mourning the loss of Mike Matheny as Cardinals manager?
Oh my gosh.
I am.
Cubs fan at the back. I sure am.
I love that guy. Know,
right. I think Mike Matheny got a lot of, I'm not sure. The thing that I am interested about, just from a psychology of a fan base standpoint, do I think Mike Matheny had run its course and it was time for him to go? I do. I don't think that he was adding anything to that, you know, to the team or anything like that. It was just time. Sometimes things run their course. I think Mike Matheny had run his course. Now, at the same time, I think, Neil, you might have even tweeted or said something about this. You know, like, I believe Cardinals upper management was talking about, we feel like we have the talent, you know, to still win the National League. I don't think it's an overly talented roster. What I'm saying is, I'm not sure Matheny has underachieved by like a huge, large margin. I think there's holes on that Cardinal roster. The lineup is not amazing. The pitching staff is shaky at spots. They've had to rely on a lot of young guys. This looks like an 85 win team, and I think it has all season. And that's essentially what Matheny was guiding them to. So again, do I think the change needs to be made with Mike Matheny? Probably so, but also,
I'm going to defend Mike.
I'm not sure that. Yeah. Do what?
I'm going to defend Mike Matheny for a second and give you something. I'm curious to get your thoughts here. Matheny, because of his characteristics and the hard jaw and the way he stares and all that stuff, takes a lot of criticism. He's basically, in my opinion, a net neutral manager. He doesn't cost you games. He doesn't win you games. He's old school. I don't know that he relates great with other players. I thought he sort of threw Dexter Fowler under the bus, and then Dexter Fowler turned around, and by complimenting Joe Maddon and Davey Martinez the way that he did, he threw Matheny under the bus. But when I look at the Cardinals, I see a pretty good lineup, some fairly strong starting pitching, some weak spots. Not a great defensive team, not a great base-running team, but I see a bullpen that's a disaster, and it's a bullpen that was put together by John Mozeliak, who never gets really criticized. Here's a stat for you. Since the All-Star break, not including last night, by the way, since the All-Star break, the Cardinals' bullpen has an ERA of 8.69, which is higher than the ERA of the four Cubs position players who've made five appearances since the break. Their ERA combined is 5.79. It's hard to win in baseball when your bullpen's a walking, talking disaster. And it cost Mike Matheny a lot of games in the first half of the season, that bullpen, and maybe it was his mismanagement of said bullpen. I just never really thought they had the arms to get people out in the seventh, eighth, and sometimes the ninth innings. He was forced to really rely on Jordan Hicks. May have run his arm into the ground a little bit. I just thought that was their Achilles heel, and I don't know that is completely Mike Matheny's fault.
No, I agree, and I'm looking at the roster now. You know, their big free agent acquisition right before the season, or maybe right, it was Greg Holland, and he's just been terrible. You know, and guys, some of their other veteran guys, like, you know, Brett Cecil hasn't worked out very well this year. You know, Luke Gregerson, when he pitched, hasn't been very good. So you're right. I mean, they've had to ride, you know, Jordan Hicks, Mike Myers, you know, some of those guys, and they've had, you know, good moments and bad moments. But yeah, I totally agree. I wish there was a stat, you know, obviously for players, we have WAR, wins above replacement. For managers, there's no real stat about that. But I tend to agree with you that if there were a stat for WAR for managers, Matheny would be somewhere around zero. You know what I mean? Not a net positive, not a net negative. Again, you just kind of laid out what the team, you know, they've got some talented players, got some good starting pitching. Bullpen's been bad and defense is bad. What does that add up to? Sounds like a kind of a 500 team. And last time I checked, the Cardinals are around 500. So again, you know, like, that's not really defending Matheny, because you were talking about his roster management. It just seemed like he was clashing with players. Just a lot of kind of brush fires that you were dealing with. It felt like time, but yeah, I just, there's a lot, you know, when you're a manager, there's some things you can control and some things you can't. And a bad bullpen will make a decent manager look bad in a hurry.
Yeah, it's the whole, you know, we just get – it's a little bit of laziness in narratives. You know, it's like, frankly, I think Theo Epstein sort of – and look, the Cubs are good and they have the best record in the National League and all that stuff, and they're going to be playing meaningful baseball in August and September. But if Theo Epstein had decided to keep Jake Arrieta and not sign Yu Darvish and change nothing about – just give the Cubs Arrieta's Phillies numbers. The Cubs are 6-7 games up in the Central right now. That was an Epstein decision.
Boy, have you gotten spoiled. You have gotten so spoiled as a Cubs fan. The Cubs are good again, man. But you're totally right about that individual decision. When I look at general managers and managers to that degree, but when you're making personnel decisions, you know, it's almost like counting cards at the casino a little bit, or, you know, just playing percentages. Like, not every single decision you make is going to hit, but does your overall philosophy make sense? Does the move you made at the time make sense? You know, overpaying for Jake Arrieta, did Yu Darvish make sense? At the time, I can see why that happened. I can understand the overall philosophy. You're right that at least in the short term, Arrieta would have been the much stronger play, and that was an Epstein decision. But I think that you look at a track record down the line, and you know, sometimes you hit, sometimes you miss. Even the good ones like Theo Epstein miss sometimes. But you're right about the individual decision. But I think overall, the reason why the Cubs are still in position to even win another World Series is because there's been an overall string of decisions that have been very good.
Last thing, Dave, there's always turnover. Who's the SEC coach that will either be on the hottest hot seat or out of a job at the end of the year?
Oh, hottest hot seat. I mean, maybe it's just like location bias and because, you know, I've covered him, but it feels like Ed Orgeron's under a lot of heat at LSU. I think he's kind of painted himself into a corner really quickly with his offense and everything like that. I mean, you know, it just makes, you know, and I've talked about this before with other people, you just wonder, you know, after the Ole Miss situation, he talked about how much he had learned about delegating and different things like that and what his strengths and weaknesses are. And the way he's talking about his offense right now, you just wonder if that's really the case. You know what I mean? We've talked about this ad nauseum. I mean, there's many things that Ed is terrific at. He's a good defensive line coach. He's a great recruiter. I think there's his motivational abilities are really good. But do I want, you know, Ed Orgeron necessarily helping to construct my offense? I'm not really sure that's where you want to go, you know? And so, again, as a coach, I do totally agree that you have to be comfortable with what's going on. And so if Ed wasn't comfortable with Matt Canada, you got to make a decision. But I also don't know if you need a yes man on that side of the ball. And so I just think that Ed has, by his decisions with some of the coordinators, has just painted himself into a corner very quickly. And as we know, you know, LSU expects a high level of success really quickly. And so I think that Ed is the one that I'm watching right away, at least.
Yeah, no doubt, because you look at their schedule. Neil and I went over this last week. They open with Miami. They could easily lose that game. I think it's in Charlotte. And then they've got a stretch here of – they play Auburn at Auburn. That's probably a loss. And then a stretch of Ole Miss at home, which they're going to be favored, but it's a weird game, at Florida, Georgia, State, Alabama, at Arkansas in a row.
Whew.
Thing could get ugly quick.
Yeah. Right, and I mean, all those games, like we always say, aren't played in a vacuum. The other teams will have things going on in their lives as well. But, yeah, it's just if, you know, if the LSU offense, like you said, maybe they play Miami and it kind of sputters. You know, there's not a ton of time to get that baby rolling again. You know what I mean? And suddenly, you know, the criticism comes out and things get tight in the program and, you know, it could turn ugly really quickly. But, you know, I was impressed at how they righted the ship last year, kind of against all odds. You know, it looked like after that Troy loss that, you know, it might be an epic disaster down in Baton Rouge. Really, they righted the ship and had a pretty good year. So we'll see. I haven't, like, totally given up on Ed Orgeron yet. But I'm, you know, I think the boat is a little shaky right now.
Enjoy your last few days before it all really, really picks up. And we'll see you soon, bud.
Absolutely, guys. Always fun. Take care.
Thanks to David for joining us today. I'll tell you that the name to know in Memphis Realty is Stacy Berry, a Keller Williams agent looking to help you find your special place to call home in downtown, midtown, Germantown, or Collierville. Keller Williams, the number one real estate agency in the world, with number one in agents, units sold, and volume sold. And the Berry home team is now an integral part of that brand. So if you're a first-time home buyer looking to downsize, Stacy will evaluate, determine your current home value, and sell it quickly for top dollar. So to sell your home, buy your home, or invest in real estate, call the Berry Home Team today and let Stacy unlock Memphis for you. You can reach her at 901-481-6420, Stacy Lane Berry at kw.com and theberryhometeam.com. That's Stacy with an E, Berry, the name to know in Memphis.
How well do you know your credit? Brian McLaurin is an experienced attorney offering a unique, highly personalized service to not only repair credit, but also educate clients on the ever-changing world of credit. He will work with you for an entire year to help you create a personalized plan to raise your credit score to help you meet your financial needs. No one else offers this kind of personalized credit counseling. This is why Gambrell and Associates refer their clients to Brian to get a fresh start. So whether you're looking to fight off debt, get approved for home car loans, or for that luxury credit card, let Brian McLaren get your credit fixed and teach you how to take control of your credit. Brian provides you the valuable information he has acquired through years of experience and research, and this allows him to offer a unique personalized service for anyone in any state, as he is always available to his clients by phone and email. It's bhmclarenlaw@gmail.com or give him a call, 662-298-2029. Podcast also brought to you by Harry Alexander. Harry is an Oxford-based REMAX Legacy Realty agent. He's been in Oxford more than four decades. No one knows the residential and condo market in Oxford the way Harry does. Get in touch with him. Go to his site. It's harryalexander.com. You can filter through by what you're looking for at the Properties and Neighborhoods tab at the top left, and then send him an email, ha@harryalexander.com.
Podcast also brought to you by Community Mortgage, Oxford, Memphis, Settle County, and Chattanooga. Underwriting and processing is done in Memphis. Speaking of local underwriting, understands your market, leader in condo financing in Oxford, and the float down option. So to find Jason, 662-234-2704, or JLO, J-L-O-W-E, at communitymtg.com. And I'll remind you again to check out GNM Pharmacy in Oxford, a great local option for your pharmaceutical needs. They deliver local in the Oxford area. So, you know, David jumping on the bandwagon too. It appears that everyone is expecting Ed Orgeron to fail in Baton Rouge this this fall.
He does. David made a good point. He does not get the credit he probably deserves for the way they salvaged last season. It's hard to do that year after year. It's why I'm always wary of coaches who do the us against the world thing. You can do that once. You can't do that every year.
Well, it is somewhat just kind of a bad strategy in general, because everyone is not out to get you. It creates an atmosphere in your program where program-wide it's, oh, my God, I can't trust you, and it is over. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's just a football game. You got fans. You got people that don't like you.
Oh, hey, Houston. Yeah, were your ears burning? I'm sorry. Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I understand. How's the coaching search going? Not well. Okay. Well, take care. Hey. They remember November and September. Bye. Sorry, I had a phone call.
You spell fun. WIN.
You do. WIN.
Houston Nutt will never get the credit he probably deserves for the way he changed morale with that 08 team because of just the absolute catastrophe that followed.
Nor will he get the proper amount of blame for how he changed the morale in 2011.
Yeah, so he probably should just cut his losses and move on, I guess, when you think about it. Yeah, there's never – I mean, in all seriousness, I mean, you've covered other programs, but in my 12, 13 years, whatever it is now, good grief. Wow. Yeah, 12, 13 years. I've never seen a more beaten down team than the interview session, whatever day it was, days before that 11 Egg Bowl. It was in the old team meeting room, and it was at night after a practice, I guess. And we talked to like Cody and a couple other people, Pruitt.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And I mean, just nothing. I mean, really, just. There was no energy is cliche and not the right term, but I don't know how to explain it. It was a completely dead room where the players didn't want to be anywhere around any of the coaches or, frankly, probably each other at that moment.
That was a total malaise.
Yeah.
It was just done. I mean, that month, I would search for reasons to not go. Oh, I got to go. And you go, and it was depressing. So
they couldn't even fake it anymore. It
actually got easier after the Kentucky game. I mean, you mentioned the state game, but I remember that being like, okay, well, at least we're not playing games anymore. That was bad. It's a bad season. It was the exact opposite of 2008. Where in 2008, they were kind of fun to be around in November. They were bouncing around and
oh, they were great in 08. I mean, yeah. I mean, I've told the story. I mean, Nutt's first couple days or whatever, we finally got players, and Tony Fine was one of them, and kind of tried to press him a little on, well, what's different, you know? Well, what was wrong with the other one? And finally, he just looked at us and goes, "Come on, guys, you know,
yeah,
like don't make me say it. Just you know how bad it was. It's different." And he went, "Yeah, just."
I can't remember who it was. I want to say it was Kendrick Lewis. After the Egg Bowl in 08, we were sitting in the team room, and I just walked up to him, and I said something, and he kind of almost got emotional, and he said, I'd forgotten that football could be fun. I'd just kind of forgotten it could be fun. And it is supposed to be fun. It is not. When people turn sports, football, basketball, baseball, whatever, into, like you said, that us against the world, paranoid, life hinges on it.
Constantly turned up to 10.
It typically doesn't work. It typically doesn't work. It's worked for Nick Saban because they go out and recruit the best players. Tons of them, and every day is competition.
Well, and they don't have to deal where the us against the world starts getting on you is when adversity hits. And I mean, look, everybody has some semblance of it, but Alabama relatively has no adversity a lot of seasons. They just win games. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, they like last year they had adversity.
They did lost, last year. That's
they
a different.
They lost a bunch of linebackers.
Yeah.
And you did see their medal show through.
And lost a game that could have ended their season.
Yeah. Yeah, they did. They got
popped.
Got popped pretty good at Jordan-Hare.
So.
And then it worked out.
It did work out. Dang. It's amazing. Caught a heck of a break.
Well, in defense of them, and I'm not one to defend them often, when you are as good as they are, if you put yourself in position to catch breaks, you sometimes will.
It's the football version of just make the tournament.
Yeah.
Something will happen.
Yeah.
Make the tournament.
Where they got fortunate was they probably avoided a disaster in Starkville because it was right there on the cusp.
That's true.
I mean, it was there. I remember that game. They were on the brink.
That was in Starkville?
In Starkville, and Jalen Hurts pulled it out. It's why That's when right. everybody turns on Jalen Hurts, it's like, dude's won a bunch of games. I've talked about this before, Jalen Hurts. 2016, Oxford, before that season fell apart, Ole Miss owned them in parts of the first half. And when Marquise Haynes basically took Jalen Hurts' head off, ball lays on the ground, Youngblood picks it up, runs it in, Breeland Speaks probably breathes life into Alabama on that play with the dumb penalty. But Jalen Hurts goes over to the sidelines after that play, and I'm guessing that he was seeing stars and probably hearing all sorts of things in his ears. Freshman. First road start, if I recall. And composed himself. Comes back out and plays a great game. Otherwise, they lose that day. So when all the Alabama people do the Tua, Tua, Tua thing, it's like, man, you got to give that kid some respect.
No doubt. So plenty of time to talk about it. Weeks, actually, building up as we still are not actually at football season. But it's all good.
Yeah, we have some time.
Yeah, Jeffrey Wright on tomorrow's show, I assume. Barrett Salee on Friday. As well. So more coming to you on the Billy's Pecans Hotline. Appreciate David Brandt today. And check RebelGrove.com. Some recruiting up this morning. Good bit, actually. Chad Simmons with multiple stories as well. So head on over to the site. Saw we were on some semblance of fine bomb yesterday. If anything actually happened, let us know. I did not tune in to see it. But nonetheless, always nice to be thought of. And we'll talk to you tomorrow.